Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
I wanted to share tonight on my experience in Ohio, and I want to do something that, like, I've certainly never done in my life before. I want to do a message about a ministry. I just want to tell you about Time to Revive. I want to help you see what the ministry of Time to Revive is. I want to give you some details about it, share some testimony, share some verses, and then cast some vision for what is going to totally disrupt the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex in the spring in the most positive way I could imagine. I think that's probably an accurate statement. It is going to be wild. So there's this ministry called Time to Revive. I want to give you just a couple of background points here. I was contacted by a director of a house of prayer in Florida who had hosted this ministry when a campaign went on in Florida called Revive Florida. And this director of this house of prayer was calling me to say, Brad, they're going to come do a Revive Texas, and I really think you ought to be connected to them. And I was like, I don't know who these people are, but sure, give them my number. Shortly after that, the director of this ministry called Time to Revive contacted me, come to find out that their ministry is based in Richardson, so here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and that they're going to do this incredible campaign that I'll tell you more about later called Revive Texas. And I just started to get into incredible relationship with their director and then their ministry. And so my hope here tonight is, as I was able to, one more point, this last week, so just a few days ago, their director said, listen, you're going to be a big part of Revive Texas. I want to fly you out to Ohio, and I want you to see firsthand Revive Ohio. I want you to experience it. I want you to be in the middle of it. I want you to ask questions, learn what we do, learn our processes, and then have that as a foundation to be able to come back for what's going to happen here in the spring. And so my hope here is, as I went away and was floored with encouragement, my hope tonight is to encourage you. 2 Corinthians 7:13 talks about the value of imparting encouragement, to be encouraged and then impart that encouragement. Paul, talking to the Corinthians, he says, in addition to our own encouragement, we were especially delighted to see how happy Titus was because his spirit has been refreshed by all of you. This concept of encouragement being a powerful tool to both encourage others, be encouraged, and to be imparted. And so my hope tonight is that as I went away and as I was extremely encouraged, I hope to be able to impart that to you tonight, and I have no doubt that one's a gimme. You're going to walk away encouraged tonight because there are some powerful things that are happening. Second is to inform. I have been paying attention a little bit as best as I can. I mean, we're, you know, connected to the prayer room. The prayer room's all about praying for revival and asking God to bring revival and, oh Lord, revive us. And so I've been paying a little bit of attention to the concept of revival over the course of the past 10 to 12 years, and I have never seen something quite like this before. And so I am very much encouraged, and in going to Ohio and seeing what's happening there, I was able to kind of like be a personal point of documentation about what is happening in this ministry called Time to Revive. And it would be out of place for a ministry that is so connected to the heart of revival and contending for revival to be completely unaware of the fact that there is a lowercase r revival brewing right now. The seeds of revival, the beginning of revival, is stirring right now in a major way. And so I want to inform us about that, and that in itself will be a strength. And then lastly is I want to give us hope again. I know so many of us, we've been praying. You know, if you've actually been contending for revival for a decade, it is so incredibly difficult to keep that fresh and to continue to believe for it, because after seeing 10 years pass and no revival, it is easy to get discouraged and go, well, because we've been praying for 10 years, I now have a personal history of no revival. Praying for revival for 10 years equals no revival happens, therefore I quit. And that is the totally wrong approach. But it is a very natural and human response when we pray for something and don't see it with our eyes. And so I just want to give you these two verses, Romans 8:25 and then Romans 12:12, talking about this renewal of hope and this reality of having to wait and to continue to sow. And my heart tonight is to recast vision and hopefully renew hope. Romans 8:25 first. But if we hope for what we do not have, we wait for it patiently. And so, both of them are up there. If we hope for what we do not have, we wait for it patiently. And the second one, be joyful in your hope, patient in the affliction of that waiting, and be faithful in prayer, even while you're still hoping for the things that you do not yet have. If we hope, we hope for what we do not yet have. I want to encourage us tonight to renew our hope and to share some testimonies tonight that I believe will actually help give us a little bit of a foundation to continue to contend for revival, to contend for a mighty move of God in our region. Well, the first thing that I want to do is I want to tell you who Time to Revive is. So that's the name of this ministry. They're called Time to Revive. Their director's name is Kyle Martin. I really, really like Kyle. I mean, we have just become buddies quick. He's about my age, maybe a year older, 4 kids, lives in the area. Fiery dude. I just really, really like him. Humble. But I want to tell you a little bit about what their ministry is, give you kind of a picture of what Time to Revive is, and then we'll get into some of the details. So they're a national kingdom-minded ministry. Let me tell you what that means and what that doesn't mean. When I think about kingdom-minded, I think about people who are a part of a local church, who are doing lots of things that don't benefit their church worth squat, who are reaching out, who are doing things for the greater body of Christ that probably won't benefit their personal life, their personal finances, their church growth. When I think about a national ministry, a kingdom-minded national ministry, it's a ministry that has a vision for the body of Christ over and above it has a vision for its own congregation. I mean, Kyle goes to a church somewhere. He's involved in a local congregation. But his ministry isn't to build their local body. His ministry is to build the church. It's so powerful. It's so freeing and giving. And it's also difficult because there's real finances involved and time involved and human resources involved. And it's difficult to live that way. And so I appreciate a ministry that is kingdom-minded. I mean, the prayer room has a very similar thought process. But they've got a national platform. They are going throughout the nation and benefiting the church at a national level. And they're putting feet. Here's the thing that I love about them maybe the most right now is how I see them putting feet to our prayers. They are putting feet. They've got strategy to actually begin to walk out revival at a small level. You know, any revival, big R revival, had some small beginning somewhere doing something. It started with 2 people or 10 or 20. I mean, it didn't start with 1,000 people. It started with a handful. And it didn't start with nothing. It started with them doing some activity for Jesus. Praying, evangelizing, the church plant. They listened to God and did some mission, something. I mean, they started with small acts of obedience. I see them taking those small acts of obedience. And I'm telling you right now, this thing is going to grow and explode. They've already led significant campaigns in multiple states. They've been where have they been? They've been in Tupelo, Florida, Tupelo, Mississippi. They've been in Sarasota, Florida. They've been all throughout Indiana. They've been in Minnesota in many places. And now they're in Ohio in a number of different counties. I mean, this is like really happening, and it's really awesome. And one of the things that I love about this ministry that I'm so excited about, and again, part of my intent tonight is it's not okay any longer that this church doesn't know what Time to Revive is. Like, if you came in tonight and you couldn't really tell me exactly what their ministry is, that's not okay anymore. We got to fix that. And I'm sorry that we don't have a church of 10,000 people that we're giving this message to, but all 9 of us are going to run with this, okay? Yeah. And so it's important to me that we get a feel for what's happening right now because the hand of the Lord is on this ministry in a way that is unique. The favor of God is resting on this ministry. It's one thing to have a godly plan. It's another thing to have a godly plan that you're actually doing. But neither of those mean God is with you. I mean, neither of those things mean that God is actually propelling you forward. You can be doing things and serving God and honoring God, but that doesn't mean lots of people are being impacted and doors are opened and favor is resting on you. I mean, I'm very grateful that we have a plan and we have a godly plan. I believe we have a godly commission plan, but oh my goodness, we are not being thrust forward right now in any significant way. But that's not the case with Time to Revive. The Lord's hand is on this ministry in a notable way, in a very unusual way. And they are able to mobilize the church unlike anything I've ever seen. They are able to mobilize the church to do the work of the kingdom in a very specific way, in a way that I've not experienced and that I've not heard about. I'm not saying that these things don't exist. I'm just saying I pay attention. I'm looking around the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I'm kind of hearing little whispers across the nation. They are mobilizing the church in the most profound way that I have experienced. It is very powerful. Second, they have a clear strategy on how to share Jesus. Their ministry is so simple. I mean, it's so simple in its method. It's very complex in all the components that are required to be able to pull off that very simple method. But here's what they do. They share the gospel with people on the streets, in schools, wherever they can get into. But remember that whole favor of God thing I was telling you about a minute ago? Favor of God versus not favor of God looks like this. You try to get into a school to evangelize, and the door is shut in your face, and there is no open door. You approach a school and say, we want to come and evangelize these lost public school kids. Will you let us? And they open the door and let you come in and witness to lost kids in a public school, and then lost kids come to know Jesus. That's very different than the model we're used to, okay? And so here's what they do. Very clear strategy. I just want to step you through this because it's so brilliant and so attractive to me. It's so easy. Here's what they do. They've gotten these Bibles made that say Time to Revive on them. And they've kind of got their own little like brand of a witnessing tool. They've got a Bible. It says Time to Revive, and then everything on the inside of it's just like your Bible. But there's these like thumb cutouts, kind of like an encyclopedia. Can you imagine an old school encyclopedia? And there's the little black tabs, but it's like cut out like your thumb can. Can you kind of imagine? I still don't know how to talk about those things. I don't know what they are. So if anybody has a term that makes sense to people, I'm happy to use that term. So index tabs, but they're thummy ones. So thummy index tabs. Okay. Indented thummy. I'm putting that thumb in there because you just put that thumb down. It's so fun. So anyway, they've got their own Bible and it's got these thumb tabs, okay, that are color coordinated. You look at it and you go yellow, black, and there's these colors. And then they have these wristbands that they hand out. And the wristbands have the same colors in the same order as the tabs do on the Bible. And then these wristbands have got verses embedded or raised. They're raised verses, the addresses, on each one of the colors. And they step people through the Roman road like way to salvation. For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God, eternal life in Christ. They step you through these things. And they're on the same thing as the wristband. And so what they do is they'll go out and they'll witness to somebody. And I'll tell you how in a minute because it's brilliant. It's the best strategy I've ever heard for evangelism. They go out and they witness to somebody. And they'll give them a Bible and they'll give them a wristband. And they go, the person's like, you know, why? What is this wristband? Or whatever. Well, let me show you the verses. And they point to the colors and they explain. Yellow is sin, like a poison in our soul. We've got sin in our lives. So for all have fallen short of the glory of God, all have sinned. And so they step them through that verse and they explain what that means. And then they go to the next verse. And it's the next color on the wristband and the next color on the tab is black. It's like black, the wages of sin is death. That black represents death. And then they go to the next one, they go to the next one. And eventually they get to the end and they say to somebody, say, have you ever heard these verses before? And the person normally says no, even church folk. No, I've never put this storyline together before. And they just say, well, is there any reason why you wouldn't give your life to Jesus today for him to now be your Lord and to lead and save you from this death and give you the joy of life and allow you to experience life with him forever? And people are saying yes, left and right. I mean, or I guess they're saying, no, there's no reason why I wouldn't do that. They're saying yes to Jesus. But here's their method. Okay, so I just gave you kind of I skipped to the middle of the story, all right? Here's really how they do it. They send out teams and they say, your objective today when you go out and minister, your objective is not to share the gospel, it's to love somebody. And as you love them, look for open doors, create any opportunity possible to share the gospel. But if you share the gospel and you did not love, you fail. So don't go out to share the gospel, go out to love. And then, yes, for sure, do your best to share Jesus. I mean, this is normally what I've seen is two sides of the pendulum. One is the street evangelism that if they're not careful, they can be very abrasive. And they get in somebody's face and they say, you need Jesus, you're going to die and go to hell right now. And most people, their ears are closed to that message. And so people don't give their life to Jesus. I've tried that a good bit. And it's a difficult selling point on the gospel. The second side is relational evangelism that never actually gets to sharing Jesus with somebody. You just be nice and you love and you're friends with them, but you never actually tell them that they're a dirty, rotten sinner going to die and go to hell and need Jesus. And it's like you need both. You got to have both. And so this ministry does it so beautifully. Here's a couple of the components that make it so different from what you and I are used to. The biggest component, I would say, is time. This time to revive thing, they give time in a way that I've never seen before. They'll say it this way. They do two-hour-long outreaches every day, one in the morning and one at night, or in the afternoon. And in this two-hour outreach, they send a team out, and they tell that team, if you get to a second person, great. If you just hang out with that one person the whole time and love them, awesome. Now, I've never heard of a model of evangelism before that states on the front end, spend as much time with that person as you need to love them and show them love and to build a relationship even before you share the gospel with them. I've never heard that model before. The idea is you do an outreach and you try to share the gospel with as many people as possible in as short a period of time as possible that's not totally offensive. And their thought process is completely different. It's go out and love people and spend as much time with them as you need. And in the process of that, love on them and pray for them. Their big like evangelistic door opener is prayer. Well, man, we can do that. Their starting point for how to get the gospel, get somebody ready to receive Jesus, is to do the prayer room's model of personal ministry. Hey, is there anything I can pray for you? Most people, even out in the world, are going to say yes to that because they have terrible problems happening in their life, all of them, just like you do. And most of them don't have the hope that you have. So their problems are even worse. And so they just figure out ways to relate to people and be kind to people and talk to people. And they've got an entire strategy of how to approach somebody and talk to them. I've heard beautiful, you know, strategy points about how to get that icebreaker moment to somebody that you don't know or whatever. And just be able to kind of open that conversation up. And then just, hey, how are you doing? We're just out today just praying for people and just asking them if we can help them in any way. Like, what do you need? If you could get anything from God right now, what would it be? Well, that's a pretty simple question. But that's a question that lots of people will actually have an answer to because they're like, well, my brother's in the hospital or you know, I'm in an abusive relationship or this thing hurts or I've got this thing wrong or you know, I have no leg. I mean, there's something. They're like, man, I got problems, you know, real problems. And so sharing that, and then you get a chance to pray for them. But what happens in this praying for people, because the approach is to go so slow, the approach is to be gentle and loving and actually invest time. We've talked about this before. A significant way to show love is quality time. And most of the time, evangelism, we just leave out that component. Not because anybody's bad or mean, I just think we never thought of it. It's like, I never thought to spend a lot of time. I thought the objective was to share the gospel with as many people as possible. What they're finding is, if you increase the quality of your love, you greatly increase the fruit of how many people actually give their life to Jesus. So they're seeing people come to Jesus all over the place. So what they do is first they love them. In fact, their whole model is love, listen, discern, respond. That's what they teach all the people that are going through their trainings. And the idea is you go and you love them, And at some point in there, you pray for them. You discern, what do they need? What do they need to hear? What do they need prayer for? And this group, they're fiery, man. They go for it. And ask them if they want to give their life to Jesus at some point in there. And then give them the Bible and give them the wristband. So every encounter that they have with somebody, if the person will take it, they're going to give them the Bible and they're going to give them the wristband. And then they tell that person, even if that person already knows Jesus, they tell that person, hey, you know what? We just stepped you through. Now you can do that with your friend. Now you can do that with your mom, with your neighbor. Wasn't this pretty easy? And they run into believers on the streets all the time that have never shared their faith ever in their life, that see this model and go, well, I could do this. Like, I could totally share the gospel with my friend or my mom or my neighbor if it's okay to do it this way. Like, I could totally do that. And then it's like, you give the Bible, you give the wristband, but there are so many people that then are taking that Bible and wristband, and they're going out and sharing it with their friend. And now you've got a second degree of ministry happening that would have never happened had that first person not gone out on that outreach to share the love of Jesus. So powerful. Well, another component of this that I just love about this ministry is the simplicity of them sharing the gospel is great, but it's that simple model of gospel presentation is what makes it so palatable. What I witnessed in Ohio was normal people, lots of them, who had never shared the gospel in their life, doing it within an hour. It's the most simple thing. It was so simple and safe, the way that they set it up. They do daily training on how to share the gospel. Every single day, they're training, and their training is simple. And they're just using this wristband, and they're using skits. I mean, they're super cool. They've got all these, but it's all the same message. It's share the gospel, be kind, love people, pray for them, ask them if they've got anything in their life that they need fixed or God to break in on, and then pray for them. I could not believe how many people were crying when this model was happening. I mean, like, we're praying for people. We're just watching the tears start rolling down their face because they've never had anybody in their life stop and ask them about them and pray for them and try to help them and care about them longer than a, hey, what's up? Most people, that's the entirety of their interactions all day. What's up? Hey, hold the door. Nice to see you. They don't have anybody stop and talk to them about them and their problems and their issues. It's unbelievable how many people are hurting out there that nobody ever stops to talk to because we don't have time. We're always in a rush. We're always on an appointment. We're always on our way. And so I love this model. The Time to Revive just kind of like stops your watch and just says, listen, just love them till you're done loving them. Love them till they're done letting you love on them. Simple model of presentation, daily trainings, and going out in teams of four people every single time. That could be even five. Now, a lot of us would look at that, especially those that have got kind of a mind for evangelism. You might go, well, wouldn't you get twice as much done if you went out in teams of two instead of teams of four? Yes, but you'd also increase the intimidation level for believers who don't want to share their faith. So if you go out in a group of four and you give some specific instruction, and instead of trying to get believers that have never shared their faith before to go from 0 to 10, you get them to go from 0 to 2. Well, that's a lot more palatable, and you'll find a lot more responding to actually starting to share their faith. So here's what they do. They go in a team of four. There's one person who's experienced, and likely as not, there's three people who've maybe never shared their faith ever in their life. They just went through this training, which is what I just told you. They go through the Bible and go, the wristband and the yellow means sin, and you know, and black means death. And they go through that for 20, 30 minutes before they go out with this person who's done it a few times before. They've never shared their faith, and they do it this way. They say, listen, they've got, I love their care for the lost. They have got such a vision for how to interact with lost people in the most tender way. Little things like this. They say, if you come up on a person who's sitting on a bench and there's four of you, oh, please, dear God, don't let all four of you walk over to this person and hover over them. Dun, 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 dun. Hi, Jesus is good. Like, so one, they say, don't four of you go up. Two of you stay back over here and pray for your friend's encounter. God, break in. Soften their heart. God, break in. Soften, soften. Show them Jesus. They're praying. Now you've got an intercessory team that's real time, that's 10 feet away from you. The second thing they say is, they say, don't hover. Get down on their level. So if you're going to have a conversation with somebody who's sitting down, sit down with them. They've got 100 points like this. 100. To help the person feel comfortable as opposed to freaked out and weirded out and uncomfortable. So now you got two over here that are watching this thing happen, but let me tell you what happens. So over here, this encounter with one or two people and another person, they share the gospel with this person. This person gives their life to Jesus. And these two people over here have never been a part of seeing someone come to Jesus in their life. And they are lit up. And they come back and now they're debriefing. They talk about it. What happened? Man, I'm so glad you guys were over there praying because we could see that there was warfare. You know, but they gave their life to Jesus. They gave their life to Jesus. And they start talking. They celebrate. And they're like, well, do you want to do it next time? I'm in. And they get addicted. And now they want to share. And they go, you just did the Bible thing? I just did the Bible thing. And then they talk about every meeting on the way home. They all get back in their car and they start heading back. They debrief and they go, what could we have done better? How could we have shared more clearly? You know, oh man, I was standing up the whole time. I really probably should have sat down. That way I wouldn't have, you know, been imposing on that person. Or I kind of jumped the gun. I jumped right to the Bible. I should have prayed for him a little bit more. You know, they just dialogue about it, and they get better and better and better and better at sharing their faith. It's the wildest thing. It's so simple and it's so clear. I love it. I love it. They make interaction about sharing Jesus' love the first thing. Share that love practically. You are absolutely going to use the name of Jesus. But you don't start with Jesus. You start with them. You start with who are you and what do you need and how hard is life? How good is life? Talk to me about you. And you start to figure out them. You minister to their need and pray for them. And then you share the salvation that Jesus offers only afterwards. I just love that. Well, I'll tell you a little bit more about how this ministry operates. They do nightly preaching meetings. Now, I've never seen anything like this before. When I say nightly, I mean every night, but I think the way that they're doing it in Ohio is every night but Sunday night. So 6 nights a week, there's an event for you to invite the person that just gave their life to Jesus to come to. Hey, come to such and such church tonight. We're going to be, you know, talking about Jesus and you want to get baptized? We'll baptize you tonight. And they're doing all this stuff at this nightly meeting, and it's happening day after day, week after week. It's happening. And every night what they're doing is they're kind of casting a vision for the value of evangelism and for why we evangelize and a little bit on the how. But they do those morning trainings every single day. Another thing they do is they're sending these teams out all at the same time. So there are these two outreaches. They're sending out a bunch of teams all at the same time. So you kind of know that you're like with the body of Christ in the region doing this thing together, going out every day of sharing your faith. Another component of that is they've got people coming from all these different churches. Remember I told you they're able to mobilize the church in a way I haven't been able to see before. These outreaches, more than likely you've got multiple churches represented in one pod of four. You got a person from First Baptist Church and Pentecostal Church and two from this church. And they're going out together and they're sharing their faith as the body of Christ. It's not representative of a church. It's representative of the church in the region. That's a value that I've never heard of. Really. I mean, I've heard of it. I just haven't seen it work. I haven't seen people do it in a way that it actually worked because normally the person at the top of that really did have a secret agenda to get all those people into their church. And it makes it tough because of the division and the disunity. But that's not the case with these guys. Another, they eat daily breakfast, lunch, and dinner together. Every day. It's crazy. They get together for breakfast at so-and-so's church. And then they get together for lunch at a different church. And then they get together at night at the host church. And anybody who wants to come in can eat. And so now you got all these people coming in. Well, how do you finance that? They get a bajillion churches in the region to all participate together to sponsor meals. You'll do breakfast on Mondays? Okay, good. You'll do lunch on Mondays? Great. You'll do dinner on Mondays? Okay, good. How about you for Tuesday mornings? And they finance this thing through the resources of the church in the region, as opposed to it coming out of one ministry or whatever. It is crazy. And another thing that they do that helps it grow that I'm just, I so value, they go out to churches every day and share what they're doing. So once they're in a region, they go out to churches, additional churches every single day that they're talking about what they're doing. And what they have happen is everywhere they get started, they wind up with way more people involved at the end of it than they did at the beginning. Way more churches involved at the end of it than they did at the beginning. Because the rumors start going out. Man, I heard these groups are out all over the city like evangelizing. Like, what's all that about? Oh, it's that Time to Revive thing. What's Time to Revive? Well, they got a meeting tonight if you want to go. Oh, well, I can't go tonight. It's okay. They have a meeting tomorrow night too. And the next, you've got no excuse here. Just clear your schedule. Figure it out. So they've got a clear strategy. But I want to tell you, while I love their strategy, I love it. I fell in love with what they're like. I fell in love with their spirit, just who they are. There's this verse in Daniel 6:3, that talks about what an excellent spirit rested on Daniel. And I believe it was one of the reasons he was able to have the ministry that he did before Nebuchadnezzar and the others, is there was just such an excellent spirit on him. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him. And the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. There is such an excellent spirit on this ministry. They do things so well. Their director is humble and he listens. I'll just tell you, they are doing things so well. And they have so many things going for them and so much favor that the tendency when you've got those things going on is to turn your ears off when people have suggestions and ideas. I've watched him implement 4 of my ideas. I just said, hey, I don't know, would this be a good idea? He was like, that's actually a great idea, let's do it. And they did it. And some of those things cost money. I mean, he is a humble leader. He listens, there's incredible favor that rests on him and the ministry, and he's an excellent communicator. And that's then reflected in the way that their ministry operates, in the way that they communicate even in-house. He's fun and filled with joy. Their whole team is filled with joy. I got to spend the week this week, or three days, with some of the most joy-filled, fun-loving jokesters, I mean, playing around, messing with each other, sharing the gospel, just filled with joy. These are a godly group of people, and they are on mission. They are serious about their outreach times. The only thing that I could compare the way that they are serious about their outreach times is the way that the prayer room is serious about sacred trust. Like, you've got a time. Be on time and do what we do. They're serious about their outreaches, and they do 2 every day, in the morning and in the afternoon. They're serious about it. I don't know how many times in 3 days I heard their leadership, I heard Kyle and others in their leadership say, okay, guys, remember, be on the outreach today, for real. Like, don't skirt it. Don't try to get out of this. Like, let's be on the outreach. Let's be out there and engage and try to engage other people that they'll, like, engage too so that they'll go on the outreaches as well. I just so love that about them. They have missionaries like the prayer room does that raise missionary support. They have 90 of them. And it's wild to see them operate. It is wild. So think the prayer room, and when we bring a missionary on, their main job is pray, but they have to do a bunch of administrative stuff too to keep the world spinning. Their main thing is do outreaches, but they also have to keep the world spinning. It's just sweet. It is awesome. They are the hardest working, most dedicated group of individuals I have ever encountered in my life. I was embarrassed. I don't know how healthy or sustainable this is, but they all seem very healthy, and they've been doing it for quite some time. They do 18 hours a day, 6 days a week. Ministry. I kept asking their missionaries, how do you keep doing this? And they all gave me the same answer. And it wasn't in different words. It wasn't like they were programmed. This was real to them. They say, when you see the people transformed, it's addicting. You don't even need sleep anymore. I was like, and I kept hearing that story. They get up at 5 a.m. and they go to bed at 11 p.m. and they do it 6 days a week. And they don't have any time. They are crazy. I was embarrassed. I was like, I need a nap. Like, I mean, dude, I'm like, dude, we've been up a long time, man. I'm tired. Like, this is intense, you know? And I was like, golly, and they just keep going, going, going. I watched it for days. I was like, when is there a break? Like, well, on Sunday, and I'm like, yeah, but I know how that day really looks. And like, yeah, you're right. We're really in meetings and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't get it. I don't understand. Again, I'm not necessarily an advocate of that intensive version of this, but they are serious and wild. I mean, they are dedicated to their mission. They have a mission from the Lord. Next, they're wise and respectful. I was telling you guys earlier about how many policies and guidelines is a better word. How many guidelines they have for sharing the gospel. They have that at every level. They've done, I think it's here in front of me. Let's see. They've done 1,300 plus background checks because they want to have, when they do all these outreaches, they want to have what they call kid-friendly teams. And so every time they are getting ready to do the outreaches, they go, okay, who's kid-friendly approved? And the leaders that are kid-friendly approved put their hands in the air, who've got a background check, and they've gone through some process to make sure that it's okay that kids are brought on that team when they go out because they're safe. And they've been trusted, they've been vetted, they've gone through some training on how to deal with kids, and that kind of thing. Like, what ministry does that to share the gospel with, I mean, they do because they want the kids to go on the outreaches, but they don't want the kids to be in danger. They don't want the kids or the parents to be wondering, hey, well, how do I know that this person that's leading this team isn't a pedophile or something? I mean, like, how do you know? I mean, they just so much care. They are wise and they are respectful. They follow these ministry protocols in such a loving way. They are incredible, and they have some significant ministry strengths. They operate greatly in team ministry. Kyle's not the guy that does everything. He's got a great team, and they all own their various departments and divisions and things. It is amazing to watch them, and they have many skilled people. They are highly organized, and they're well-financed. I have yet to find something negative to say. They are outstanding. They have an excellent spirit. And the favor of God is on them. And the reason that organized and money really matters is because if you're disorganized, a move of God can only go as far as it's going to go because the Lord is then looking for partnership with human beings to run with it. They are so organized. They are a finely oiled machine. Second, they're well-financed. There's so much you can't do without money. People are throwing money at them to see the gospel go forward. It is powerful to see this happening. And because they have a model of ministry that has missionaries as opposed to just a bunch of paid staff members, they have those additional finances that they don't have to be spending on staffing and overhead. They can spend it on creating, you know, really clean-looking, you know, promotional materials and on videos and on this and that and flying pastors and leaders to locations to taste it and see it. I mean, what a powerful thing to have a little bit of extra money sitting around that you can see a leader and you go, let me stop talking. Why don't you come and see it? And to pay their way to come and see it. I am so glad he paid my way. I came back and I'm like, what two or three pastors can I pay their way so that they can come and see it? This is wild. I mean, this is powerful. All right, I want to tell you now some of what I experienced in Ohio. This is going to be some of the encouragement part. First of all, I'm going to give you Acts 2, 46 through 47. We know this verse well because it's one that we think about around here in some of the way that we express things. But I saw another beautiful expression of this in a completely different field, in a completely different, with different DNA, with a different objective, a different end goal. And I saw these things working together in such beautiful form. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. If we can get that verse up there, Acts 2, 46 through 47. Every day, and man, when I say every day, I mean every day. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes. They ate three meals together each day. And they ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. There's favor resting on this ministry everywhere they go. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. I watched it happen. Some stories I heard before I went. I'll give you what I heard before I went, what I experienced while I was there. So some stories I heard before I went. in Ohio. So just, you know, where we were. Well, actually, it happened in Indiana first, and then it happened in Ohio. First one I heard was in Indiana, where they were able somehow. One more point. Okay, so they do these, like, special ops, okay? I don't know. That's not their word. That's mine. Okay? So they've got the daily going out and sharing the gospel in the groups of four, okay? That happens. That happens like clockwork every day. Groups in the morning, groups in the afternoon. Groups in the morning, groups in the afternoon. But then what they do is their leadership team kind of gets all the people that are kind of like going, hey, we're here in the city that you've come to. We're going to be a part of this. They have everybody register. They go, we're going to be a part of this. What can we do? How can we get involved? And they ask questions like, do any of you have any inroads into the marketplace, into the public school system, into government, into whatever? Do any of you have any inroads? Because some of our leadership team wants to go and preach the gospel in public settings wherever we have an open door. But we're not from here. We can't get into schools and this and that. Everywhere they go, somebody is a coach. You can come preach to my high school kids. Somebody is the administrator at the something. Somebody's got an aunt that works for such and such. Somebody is on the city council. Somebody, somebody, somebody. And they ask, will you help us open a door? We want to share the gospel. Everywhere we go, we see people getting saved. And they go, well, if that's what's going to happen, maybe I will stick my neck out on the line. Okay, I'll open the door. And so this coach opens the door in Indiana. And so it's a football practice. Okay? High school football. Okay? It's hot. Sun's beating down. They're all in their pads. And the coach has invited Kyle and one of his guys to come preach the gospel at a public school to lost football players. I was that guy. I was on the football team. Lost us all. Get out. I cannot imagine. We would have torn that dude apart. He comes out there and he's just a likable dude. He shares the gospel. 23 kids on the high school football team at a secular public school give their life to Jesus. Oh, but it gets better. One of them's the all-star quarterback that's known in the region. He's like going to get all the scholarships and then this and that. All right? The only version of Christianity that he has ever seen is what just happened to him. I was at football. I was going to practice. This guy came and shared Jesus. I gave my life to Jesus. And 22 of my friends did too. This is the only version of Christianity he has any experience with. So that's what he thinks Christianity is. So you know what he does? He goes to a rival football team's practice. And because he's Mr. So-and-so, he's able to get in there. And everybody knows, oh, that's, you know, so-and-so from that school. But they think he's coming to talk football. He's not. He preaches Jesus and 15 to 20 of them get saved. Oh, but that's not all. He keeps going to rival team football, and he keeps seeing people give their lives to Jesus. But at one of the schools that he goes to, one of the kids on the rival team football team or whatever gives their life to Jesus, and his brother, it's either his brother or it was him, and he played two sports. I think it was his brother. His brother is on the soccer team at that school. But he's got this Bible now and the wristband. And he goes to his brother, and he preaches the gospel to his brother with the Bible and the wristband, and the brother gets saved, and the brother, the only version of Christianity that this brother knows is, well, when you're a Christian, you go to your sports team, and you tell them about Jesus. So at a rival high school, this is not where it started. This is 3 degrees away, okay? This kid goes to his soccer team, and he shares the gospel during soccer practice, and soccer players give their lives to Jesus. A few of them get saved. You know what they start doing? Going around to rival soccer team practices and preaching the gospel. Kyle's telling me this, and I'm like, no way. He's like, they didn't have anything to do with this. This is the wind of God moving. You cannot make this happen. You didn't suggest, hey, you know, you guys ought to go around to soccer teams. And they did it because you suggested it. So even if they suggested it, which I don't know that they did, but even if they did, no high school kid is going to travel across town to the rival high school. That is not possible unless the Spirit of God is moving. But that's what's happening. These are the kinds of stories that I was hearing about before I went. So I get there, and as soon as I get there, Similarly, this thing starts happening at the high school in the area in Ohio. This neighboring county that they just got done with, they got an opportunity to preach somehow to a football team. And 20 kids, something like that, came to know Jesus on the football team. And this trend is starting again. It's so powerful. This is what I'm hearing when I'm coming in. Daily, people getting saved, people getting healed. They believe in the gifts of the Spirit, but Kyle has got such diplomacy and such favor with all of the evangelical churches, which is something that is so unusual. Normally, this kind of initiative is either highly charismatic and most of the evangelical churches won't participate with it, or it's super organized evangelical and doesn't have a whole lot of life on it and it doesn't really work. Okay? That's typically what happens. Kyle has got this incredible gift from God of diplomacy. He believes in the gifts of the Spirit, but they're careful in the way that they present that, at least in their public trainings. When they're out laying hands on people, they're seeing people healed. This is the stories I'm hearing. Okay, now I get there. I land. Okay? My roommate, I'm put in a host home. The roommate guy that I'm with, he's like maybe 65, great dude, retired. Love Gary Robinson. Love him. Great guy. He starts telling me, hey, yesterday afternoon, we were out, and there's this gangbanger named Ezekiel. And I got him saved. I just told him about Jesus. And I'm like, I'm looking at this 65-year-old white dude who is like tall and out of shape. And I'm like, you did what? He goes, yeah. And he's just filled with the joy of the Lord. I go, tell me about this. Ezekiel is this hardcore thug, okay, on the streets. Gary has no fear. He walks right up to him, gets down on one knee, and says, hey, man, what can I pray for you about? You got a hard life? Ezekiel's probably never had a 65-year-old tall white dude walk over to whatever. And like, he just starts pouring his heart out. He's like, yeah, man, I'm on the streets and stuff. I've been unadopted 3 times. I was adopted, and because I was too much trouble, they put me back. That happened 3 times. I've been on the streets since 16, da 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 da. You know, I beat the out of this dude yesterday for selling my friend some bad drugs. It almost killed him. And, you know, da 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 da. He just starts talking. He's got the wildest stories, okay? He gives his life to Jesus, and Gary baptizes him that same night at the service. I come the next day, and I'm hearing about Ezekiel. That's all I'm hearing about, Ezekiel this, Ezekiel that. And I'm like, what is going on? Okay, so I got to share this, because this was just crazy. So that the next night, now Ezekiel doesn't have a phone. He doesn't have anything. He's a street guy. He's probably 23, 4, 5. And the next night, most of that day, Gary has been trying. Now, this is the next day after the dude got saved and baptized, okay? Gary's trying to get a hold of him again, but the dude doesn't have a phone. So he's like going where he thinks he lives in the city, you know, and kind of like trying to find him or whatever. He spends all day looking for him. That night, okay, I've been going out on outreaches, okay? I've been doing it, and I'm loving it. It's awesome, this whole concept. So it's that night, and that night, it's like 11 o'clock when they're getting done, or maybe 10:30 when they're finally done with the day, and I see Gary out in the hall of this church that we were at preaching the gospel, or just talking to this guy, and I bet that's Ezekiel. So I go over. Sure enough, it's Ezekiel. He goes, hey, listen, Gary goes, we need to give this dude a ride home. I go, okay. And on the way home, just before that, I was looking through my Bible, and I was back in the maps part. I don't even know why it just opened that way or whatever. And there was a $20 bill in my Bible that probably one of you put there at some point. I don't know. I don't even know how it got there. I haven't seen it. I don't look in the map section. It could have been there for years. I have no idea how this $20 bill got in my Bible. I'm just like, okay, $20, cool. I was like, I'll find a use for that. Okay, so now we're driving, and it's me and Gary and Ezekiel, and we're driving to the hood at 11 o'clock at night, okay? And we're driving there because Ezekiel's got this old, drugged-out friend who's going to let him stay a couple of nights there, okay? And Ezekiel's like, Gary goes, hey, bro, we got to stop by the ATM because I got to get a little bit of cash so that Ezekiel can pay this guy so he can stay there for a few days. And I was like, well, how much? And Ezekiel's like, oh, 15, 20 bucks. And I go, ah, I got it. And so I then tell Ezekiel the story. This is his first power encounter with God. He's like almost crying because I'm like, yeah, I don't have it. I mean, I didn't have this. I don't know why it was there. It's probably for you, bro. He is believing this was the gift of God for him perfectly, specifically, like nothing else. He's like touched by this. Can't believe the generosity of a stranger. You know, all that kind of stuff. Give it to him. So then we pull up. Again, 11 o'clock in the ghetto, all right? I waited to tell Amy until after I was home that we did this. All right. All right. So we're going to drop this dude off at Walt's house, okay? Walt's a train wreck, okay? And so we get to Walt's house, and as soon as the door opens, out comes the plume cloud of weed, you know, like, whoa, you know? Long story short, we start praying for Walt. And it's 11 o'clock at night, and I'm praying, oh, God, sober him up, sober him up. This is just a hardened dude or whatever. And now Ezekiel's there witnessing to his friend. Ezekiel got saved and baptized yesterday. He knows this much truth, and he knows about 50 words of truth, and he's got quite a vocabulary of expletives, way more than 50 words. I mean, so most of the gospel he's sharing was words that cannot be repeated. And so this is him sharing, and his brother and his friend's like, yeah, F, man, you're right, F. You know what I mean? They're like, they're just sitting there talking, and I'm praying God sober him up so that he can hear this. I'm watching Walt become sober. He comes out stoned and talking to us weird. Hey, man, you guys go, I mean, he's just weird and crazy. Starts sobering up. He's starting to receive this truth. And now he's got to live with Ezekiel the evangelist for the next couple of days. I mean, Walt's doomed. He's coming to Jesus. And just that's the kind of stuff. While I was there, they went to a juvenile detention center. They got an open door to go to a juvenile detention center. 13 of the 20 kids accepted Christ. They had an opportunity to preach at 3 or 4 fire stations. I don't even know how you get that opportunity. They did. They went and preached. I don't know the outcome. High school kids were skipping school to go out and share the gospel in the middle of the day. A skeptical biker, his arm was healed while they were praying for him, and he like starts freaking out because he had something with his arm, carpal tunnel, I don't know, something. And they pray for him, and he's like, oh my gosh. He's like freaking out on him while that's happening. A 65-year-old lady got out of a wheelchair. She had been in a wheelchair for a couple of years. She gets out, the wheelchair's gone. She was completely healed of the stuff that was wrong with her. I mean, this stuff's happening in the 3 days that I'm there. In the 3 days that I'm there, 40 teams of 4 people. Remember, a team is 4. 40 teams of people went out every day. That's 120 teams in 3 days. 120 teams of people went out in 3 days. Each team made up of 4 people. Believers sharing their faith every day doing these outreaches. 10 to 20 people getting saved every single day on the streets. 10 to 20 people getting saved. They get them into discipleship relationships. They don't just leave them. At the night meeting, they talk about build a discipleship relationship. They have their own 52-week discipleship curriculum. And they ask people in the room that night, who will disciple somebody? I will. And they go back to the back and they get a name of somebody that got saved that day. And they give them the discipleship material and they give them their contact information. And then they follow up with them to make sure that they're actually doing it. There are people getting discipled all over this thing. Every week, the Lord is opening up those special assignments, those special ops that I was talking about, whether it's the fire station or the juvenile detention center or the public high school. Every week, these kinds of deals are opening. And they baptize people every single night. There's people getting saved. It was wild. Well, let me tell you what they're going to do here. I'm going to do it as quickly as I can. Luke 10:2 is going to happen. We've been praying for Luke 10:2. We've been praying, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. It's going to happen in the spring. They're doing a 50-day Revive Texas. For 50 days, there'll be teams going out daily. There'll be breakfast, lunch, and dinner served at different churches. There'll be different, you know, groups and the night meetings and the baptisms every night and the salvations and the special ops. And it'll be happening every single night. We've been praying, God, release the workers into the harvest field. There's a difference between somebody deciding, I'm just going to go share my faith. Valuable. Wise. But there's something different when God releases the workers. There's something about anointed messengers that is different than the common sharing your faith. Just like we would understand the difference between anointed prayer and praying because prayer is good. There's something that happens when there's an anointing resting on that prayer that's something you can't contrive. We've been praying, God, release the workers into the harvest field, and it's happening. But what's going to happen in Dallas? You know everything I just told you? Can we get the map up? We got the map? What I just told you is going to happen times 10 simultaneously in Dallas-Fort Worth. They've broken Dallas-Fort Worth up into 10 zones. Each of these colors is a zone. Every one of these zones, think about this for a second. Any one of these zones, just pick one with your eyes right now. Any one of these zones represents what I described in entirety back in Ohio. One host church, people meeting morning, noon, and lunch, people going out in teams, churches rallied. In right now in Ohio, this group, I think they've got something like maybe 15 churches involved. Maybe 10 to 15 churches involved. They're expecting every single one of these zones to have 40 churches involved. Every single one of them! I did a little bit of math last night. They're going to do it Monday through Thursday. They're not going to do 7 days a week. They're going to do four. Monday through Thursday, nightly meetings, evangelism, partnership, this and that, all this stuff up here, by the way, all of those are churches and ministries that are already involved. This is real. These are already ones that have said yes. This is going to quadruple or more before this thing's over. To give you a little picture, when they went to Indiana, they do signups. They say, hey, if you want to be a part of Time to Revive, sign up on our website, like register. When they started, they had 400 registrations. By the time they were done, a couple of months later, they had 10,000 registrations. Right now, if you just do this reflection, there's probably, I'm just going to guess, there'll probably be 3, 4, 5, 6,000 to start. Day one. That's going to increase who knows how much. They've already got like 150 ministries that have committed. We're going to be a part of this. Here's what we're going to be a part of this means. The pastor says, I will ask and do my best to encourage and push every single member of my congregation to participate in at least one outreach. Well, I'm going to encourage all of us to participate in at least one outreach per month. At least. That's bottom line. I mean, I'm talking about the stay-at-home mom. I want the stay-at-home mom to go out on at least one outreach a month during that 50 days. I mean, it's going to be powerful, and here's what's really going to happen. The stay-at-home mom's going to go on one outreach and get addicted and start getting babysitters so that the stay-at-home mom can go on more outreaches. It's powerful to see this transformation happen. It is wild. It is so exciting. So we are about to see the wildest thing happen. I did a little bit of math. I had some help from our leadership team because I'm terrible at math. Stop laughing. Just so you know, bottom number. This is the low number. Okay, low number is 11,000 teams in 50 months and 50 days. 11,000 teams of four people. Low number. When was the last time Dallas-Fort Worth had 11,000 teams of evangelism going out for 50 days every single day, and it grows, and the church gets electrified with this and becomes alive with the gospel? It is so powerful. These outreaches are going to be going on. Here's what we get to do as a part of this as well. The prayer room was contacted in order that we might be prayer support 24/7 for 50 days. So the prayer room right now is already receiving signups from people across the Metroplex that we've never met before, because Time to Revive has got us on their website. They came out and shot a promo video. It's already on their website about the prayer room being the location for 24/7 prayer for 50 days. They're sending us singers, musicians, worship leaders, intercessors, whoever is there. And for 50 days, TPR will be 24/7 for that 50-day period. It's Easter to Pentecost in the spring. We'll be 24/7, and we're going to be praying every single hour for the outreaches, for the work of God, for the favor of God. They are expecting this to be by far the biggest thing they've ever done or seen. They've got so many prophetic words. There's so many churches that have already thrown money at this, that have already said yes. Big churches, Gateway. While I was there, one of the Gateway pastors was there in Ohio sniffing it out like I was sniffing it out. They've got Tony Evans on board. They got a bunch of big churches that are already on this map, that have already said yes. Every single one of those colors has a host church that is kind of the hub where the nightly preaching meetings are going to be happening. And then every one of the regions has got, like, look at the one on the left, the Fort Worth. See the four black balloons? Each one of those balloons represents who's going to serve lunch Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Those are churches, like the first one is the Monday church, the second one's the Tuesday church for lunch every day. These are churches that have committed like in a really wild way. This is going to be the absolute biggest thing that's happened to the body of Christ in Dallas-Fort Worth probably ever. I've never heard of so much corporate unity, agreement, working together, and it's for the sake of the kingdom, and it's going to be totally awesome. So our leadership team is going to be strategizing in between now and then. How do we get as involved as humanly possible? How do we get in this? This is transformational. I believe this is a component of the change of the understanding and the expression of Christianity. I believe this is a component that was not on my radar, that I believe is going to be part of it. Think about a missions base that was going 24/7 prayer with ease because of the finances and the strength, and also had two or three outreaches every single day that the staff were doing in this sort of a format, and it just went on indefinitely and never stopped. I mean, what if that was a piece of the future? I'm believing things like that. This is going to be powerful. So I wanted to take an entire night and go over and have all the moms mad at me to be able to explain what's going to happen, because we need to get behind this. We need to understand what's happening. We need to know our part in this. The prayer room's job is to keep that 24/7 prayer going, but I'm expecting everybody to be involved in the outreaches at some level as well. Please help keep the prayer going. Be involved in the outreaches at some level as well. This is going to shake the city in a way that is profound. They have seen thousands and thousands give their lives to Jesus. They've baptized some thousand. They've handed out I don't know how many bajillion Bibles. They've seen this happen in regions, and it's bringing transformation in government in every level. This is so powerful. Amen?
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.